Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, for archived shows, past programs. You can all check it out there. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, Melody Wilkes, health coach. Good morning to both of you. Glad to have y'all on the show.
Good morning.
How are things going in y'all's world? Hopefully well.
I can't complain.
No. Well, you know how all's going in my world. You're in my world.
Oh, that's true. I do know all the time what's going on. Yeah, I do. And it's going well. I'm healthy. I'm not sick. Although we've been around sickness for, I don't know, the last couple, three, 4 weeks. We've had several people in and out on the show, not feeling good, and upper respiratory or strep right now, big floating around out there. So anyway, got a special guest on the phone line today. Of course, along the way, if you have any questions, you can certainly call us or text us at 806-745-5800. And our guest today, Dr. Edwards.
Today we're going back to Morley Robbins. It's been a while.
I've been doing part of the protocol of his every day. It works.
Good.
Yeah.
Good plug.
A seal
there.
Of endorsement?
Yeah, no,
Mike
I mean, I don't do it all, apparently, according to Melody.
No,
but
you don't do it all.
But I do a lot of it, the beef liver and everything, every day. And I'll tell you, I think that's really good stuff.
Oh, and here's an interesting side note. I put Wade's supplements out in a little bowl for him, so he'll just, you know, take them all. I kept noticing the beef liver tablets were disappearing.
Cats were eating them.
The cats love the beef liver tablets.
Smart cats.
She, and I watched her. I watched her eat three of them.
Those cats will probably live to be 30 years old.
It's like, wow. So give them to your kitties.
Well, welcome, Morley. We're glad you're back with us.
Indeed. It's great to be here.
I know Morley's very excited to share with our listeners and with us here in the studio some stuff about Alzheimer's and neurodegenerative disease in general, which is exciting. There are obviously a number of patients with neurodegenerative disease in America, Alzheimer's in particular. I was just listening to a lecture this weekend. I forgot what doctor was quoting this study. He was predicting 50% of the people alive today, if you're alive right now, 50% of you out there are going to have Alzheimer's in your lifetime. Similar to the rates of cancer, 1 out of 2 men have cancer, 1 out of 2.5 women right now are the stats. In our lifetime, we'll have cancer. But this Alzheimer's epidemic is just absolutely skyrocketing. So when you look at one end, you know, the older folks get demented. On the other end, I'm also reading a book on autism right now, which we'll interview J.B. Handley in the near future. He's a father of an autistic child. It's really a dire circumstance. And in all these different lectures and books I read, people talk about toxicities. You know, we're fluoridating the heck out of the U.S. population, which I did an interview with a fluoride expert a couple years ago. It's on our archives. Y'all can go back and find that. Talking about the damage that fluoride does in the human body. We've talked about aluminum with Stephanie Seneff. We've talked about the different adjuvants in the vaccines with Dr. Wakefield when he was on last year. We've talked about glyphosate. We've talked about a number of things. We have not really talked about EMFs, electromagnetic frequencies coming off your cell phones and cell phone towers and Wi-Fis and all that. Dr. Mercola and Dr. Dietrich Klinghart, two pillars in the integrative world, are really preaching that message right now about the damaging effects of EMFs. Dr. Mercola's new book, I believe, is about that. You know, we've recently talked about structured water the last few shows, and Dr. Cowan last week talking about things that in his book, he explains how things damage the gel-like water that's inside your cell, things like aluminum and glyphosate and various toxins will wreak havoc intracellularly. So a number of different toxins. In the book I'm reading right now, just a really, I would say, disgusting part of our American history. Back in, it was the early to mid-2000s, there were so many, hundreds and hundreds of parents reporting to the Vaccine Injury Court, which I think most of Americans don't even realize there is a Vaccine Injury Court set up within our United States federal government to try to determine if a family can be compensated for a child who's been injured by a vaccine. But there was such an onslaught of parents filing cases with autistic kids that the court had to do something drastic. And what they did was propose that they would do three test cases. They would take three of these kids out of 5,500 kids. They would choose three, and they would run them through the court system, which, by the way, is not even a legal proceeding. There's no discovery or rule of law. This is a total legislative. That's a different topic. But my point is they picked three kids with autism, and they were going to represent all 5,500. And in those three cases, they determined one, Hannah Pauling, her autism was created by vaccines, but the U.S. Department of Justice is allowed to settle those cases at any point that they want to. So before this verdict was read, the U.S. Department of Justice settled the Hannah Pauling case for $20 million. So that took her off of the list of three cases that that would represent 5,500 kids. That removed her. So the other two cases, the court determined were not, the autism was not caused by vaccines, and therefore those two remaining cases represented all 5,500 other families. They weren't allowed to be compensated. The interesting thing, and I do have a point going here, that the Hannah Pauling case, Dr. Zimmerman, who's a national figure and a leader in the movement previously to defend vaccines and autism, admitted in the Hannah Pauling case that, yes, the vaccine caused the autism diagnosis because Hannah was susceptible because of a mitochondrial dysfunction. Her mitochondria weren't working right. And because her mitochondria weren't working right, she was more susceptible to the toxicities, the 30 different ingredients that are in a vaccine, one of which is aluminum, which is highly neurotoxic. She was more susceptible. You know, why do some kids get the vaccines and they're okay? Their brains appear to be okay. And others get injured to the point of having autism symptoms. And in this particular case, and $20 million got awarded for this, was because of her metabolic dysfunction. And I'm highlighting this because metabolic mitochondrial dysfunction is at the root of so much of this stuff. How does fluoride hurt us? How does glyphosate hurt us? How does aluminum hurt us? How does Wi-Fi hurt us? How does blue light coming off of our screens hurt us? You know, pick your person out there who's preaching, who's preaching the various toxicities that are damaging Americans. And for sure, there's no doubt that they are. So do you run and hide from the world? Do you not use Wi-Fi? Do you not expose yourself in any way to all these things? Of course, you try to mitigate all that. You try to avoid these things. But unfortunately, our world's so polluted, you're going to have a hard time functioning in the world and avoiding all these things. So the flip side to this is let's do all we can to help our mitochondria, to help our cells' natural defense mechanisms come back online. Because that's the other part that no one's talking about except probably Morley and myself, is the body's equipped to handle these insults, to take these hits. Now, yes, there's a teeter-totter effect. You can put so many toxins on the end of one teeter-totter that the thing just collapses. But if you can put enough on your other end of the teeter-totter to balance out those toxins and to protect yourself from the toxins, let's do that. And how do you do that? That's your antioxidant enzymes. These powerful, powerful enzymes. I was talking to an integrative doctor from Colorado last week who, when I told her we could do glutathione IVs in our clinic, she about fell out of her chair. She was so excited because glutathione's a powerful antioxidant. I said, yeah, we can do that. We have that capability, but there's something even better than that IV glutathione that you'd have to come sit in a chair for 30 minutes, three times a week, and spend a whole lot of money doing it and ruin your veins. You could just get your own native glutathione to kick back in, that production to kick back in, your own antioxidants inside your body that we were designed to recycle and use over and over and over. Get it working again. So that's, you know, I'm just giving this background to remind everybody when we dive in to start talking about copper and iron and mag and these minerals and the imbalance of the minerals, is really remember the whole point is we're trying to keep the antioxidant enzyme function pumped up. we want our antioxidant enzymes fully functional so we can combat all these different toxicities that are coming into our world. And, of course, you want to try to minimize. Follow Dr. Mercola's recommendations and Dr. Jack Cruz to not get blue light in your eyeballs, and follow the recommendations to avoid glyphosate and these other toxins for sure. But don't forget to raise your antioxidant enzymes, and you'll get more bang for your buck, I think, that way. So sorry, Morley, I took a big chunk of your time, but I really wanted to set the stage and remind everybody antioxidant enzymes are the focus. And things that cause antioxidant enzymes to be diminished, we need to avoid. Things that bring them up, like copper, i.e. beef liver, we want to do those things. So in regards to neurodegenerative disease, a.k.a. Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and MS, autism, you could throw in there. But brain damage, that's really what we're going to talk about today. Morley sent me an article or two about that. He's going to connect some dots for us on what exactly is going on that's causing us to not be able to take these hits on our brain, not be able to repair the brain, and suffer the consequences that we call disease. So, Morley, thank you for joining us, and I'll let you just kind of dive in with sharing with the listeners what you'd like to about what you've discovered recently in regards to Alzheimer's, and feel free to give any other background information that I might have missed there.
No, that was very important background. I appreciate you taking the time to do that. Let me just address a couple of comments that you made before we get back into the brain, just to lower the fear factor that people have about the booger-wooger environment that we live in. So you were talking about vaccine injured, and it's a very real phenomenon. You were talking about Dr. Zimmerman with mitochondrial dysfunction. But people need to really understand is that when copper is allowed to be bioavailable, it regulates iron. It keeps iron in proper regulation and balance. That's the very focal point of what runs our body. And I know there may still be some people who say, it can't be that simple. Unfortunately, it is that simple. The whole dynamic of labels that people are living with is a mismatch between bioavailable copper and excess unbound iron. So let's talk about the vaccine. It's filled with a lot of toxins, as you noted. Where is that supposed to be cleared? In the liver. And these children are being born from iron-toxic mothers, and they're producing even more iron-toxic children. And so their liver is filled with iron. It does not have enough bioavailable copper to run the antioxidant enzymes that you're referring to, which are so important, and the system shuts down. And autism is not a medical disease. It's just a clinical manifestation of complete metabolic dysfunction in a body that doesn't have enough bioavailable copper. Let's talk about Wi-Fi. What's the issue there? Well, EMFs trigger a histamine reaction in the body. And if you don't have bioavailable copper and magnesium, then you are left hopeless and helpless to the histamines, which are causing complete electrolyte dysregulation and lowering your energy production by 50%. Let's talk about glyphosate, the big factor, especially in Lubbock. And so what is glyphosate? It was a pipe cleaner. That was its original intent. Then they decided to turn it into an antibiotic, and then they decided to make it an herbicide when they realized that the runoff from the glyphosate cleaning the pipes was killing all the vegetation outside of the factories. So they thought, well, now we have something to kill the plants or the weeds that are impinging upon our farming production. Well, what's the secret ingredient? Well, glyphosate chelates copper down to a pH of 1. Your stomach pH is 2. So it's killing the vegetation. That's an undisputed fact. But we're eating food that's been tainted with glyphosate, like wheat and corn and soy and so on, and rice. Now they're making glyphosate rice. And it's continuing its chelation properties inside our gut. And so it's sucking copper out of our gut. And so we are in a body that has low bioavailable copper. There is an axiomatic, automatic accumulation of iron in that body. And where does iron accumulate first and foremost? In the liver. That's where it starts. And so all of these environmental threats, blue light. Let's talk about blue light real quick. It creates what's called the peroxynitrite radical. It's O-N-O-O, also called O-No. Well, the only way you can make O-No is when you expose the hydroxyl radical to iron. This is not complicated. And so, again, we're back to the same two elements. If you want to do something good in the body, make sure you have bioavailable copper. And if you want to create absolute havoc and destruction, make sure that the iron is unbound. Again, I want the listeners to understand that these two minerals are at the epicenter of the dynamic. And here's where it gets mind-numbing. There's 90 milligrams of copper that runs our body. That's the amount represented in one penny. And there's 5,000 milligrams of iron in a healthy human being. And copper and iron are a ventriloquist act, and iron's the dummy. And it's hard to believe that something that's so big. Well, let's go back to football. There are a lot of front linemen, right? Who runs the football show? It's the quarterback. So copper's the quarterback in our body. And there's 60 linemen for every quarterback in our body. And people need to understand that. And the erosion of copper in our body multi-generationally is frightening. The three of you over there are the third or fourth generation of mineral dysregulation in your family. Your children are the fourth or fifth. And so suddenly this process of erosion is taking on a bigger and bigger importance, and it has a profound effect on our brain. So let me just, before I get into that, any reaction or comments to what I've just shared?
Yeah, I just want to emphasize to the listeners, especially new listeners, and if you are new, please go back and listen to all the other Morley interviews over the past year. There's a number of them, and it will help set the stage. But I just want to remind everybody that iron is important, obviously. We need iron. Iron carries oxygen around the body, so it's needed to maintain life. So iron is exceptionally important, but there's this other side to iron. It's like a Jekyll and Hyde. And in one state, iron's very beneficial, and when it's chaperoned around the body appropriately, it's very beneficial. But then there's this flip side of iron. When it's unbound and when it's in a different, more toxic state, it is one of the most toxic elements that there is as far as producing free radicals. Free radicals, I think most people understand, are the little sparks of that drive the whole inflammatory cascade. Free radicals damage the cell membrane. Free radicals damage your genes, turn on the bad genes, cause DNA mutations. Free radicals oxidize things in the body and just lead to poor cellular health and function and even death. So iron triggers that whole cascade of free radicals when it's in the wrong state, when it's not carried appropriately. So that's the key here. Iron is beneficial to some degree. It's needed for life, but it has to be in a certain state. It has to be chaperoned appropriately. When it's in another state and unchaperoned, it's the most probably deadly heavy transition metal that there is. And copper is essential to keep iron in the right state, in the beneficial state. So if you suck all the copper out of somebody, which glyphosate, which is the main ingredient in Roundup, does, or if you just don't give copper to the lab animal or the human being in the diet, then you don't have copper, and iron gets out of hand, and it can lead to all the problems that we're discussing. So,
it's very great clarification. You can't live with it, can't live without it.
And the beef liver that Melody was talking about earlier, that her cats preferentially went to the beef liver in the bowl of supplements. Beef liver is probably your number one source of copper. Organ meats in general, which are our ancestors craved that. I had a pregnant, or not, I had a mom who's postpartum last week in the office. She's had four kids, and we were kind of talking about the health of her kids and kind of how each one was less and less healthy over time. And I said, well, if you would have been alive, you know, 200 years ago, living in pretty much any culture that Weston A. Price observed, you would have preferentially been given the organ meats from all the animals, from the buffalo and the different animals that they killed, because the organ meats had the minerals, copper in particular. And so this pregnant mama was absolutely depleted, and each subsequent kid was more and more depleted because copper's just not in the diet. Whole food vitamin C is another source of copper, but as we've talked about before, vitamin C diminishes greatly with shelf life. So you pick a green bean right out of your garden, vine ripened, and eat it that moment, you're getting your copper, if the soil had it, which that's a whole other topic. The soil's 80% depleted in that now. But if that green bean sits on a shelf for a week, i.e. it was grown in California and shipped to Lubbock, Texas, and it's been a week since it was off the vine, you've lost 77% of the vitamin C and the copper also. So those are just a little more background. Morley, I'm sorry.
Do you need to do a break now, and then I get into...
We've got a quick question. I think a text just came in. We'll do that,
yeah.
And we'll take a break, and then I'll shut up and let you dive into Alzheimer's, because I know the listeners are really wanting to hear that because of this epidemic that's upon us.
It is an epidemic. You're right.
Okay, yeah. So the text before we go to the break, Greg wants to know, do you recommend a good copper supplement to go along with the magnesium I take now?
The three sources of copper that I think are the best and most bioavailable are grass-fed beef liver or the desiccated beef liver tablets, a whole food vitamin C, and there are only a couple brands that I recommend, either innate response tablets or pure radiance powder, and locally grown bee pollen. Again, those are bioavailable sources. What people need to understand is that beef liver, if it's grown properly, allowed to be outside in the sun, eating grass, has twice as much copper as there is iron in a healthy beef liver. And as Dr. Ben was just pointing out, the brain, the endocrine glands, the heart, the kidney, the pancreas, and the liver are the most copper-rich parts of our anatomy. And those were the foods, those were the meats, those were the organ meats that our ancestors regularly ate that were drummed out of the diet about 50, 60 years ago.
Yeah. And I don't remember if I've mentioned this on the show or to you, Morley, but I had a patient the other day, a cattleman from New Mexico, and they really pride themselves in a top quality herd and a healthy herd. But he was telling me they would biopsy their cattle's liver twice a year to assess the mineral status, purely for that reason, so that they could, if need be, supplement specific minerals that the cattle were deficient in. And when they did this consistently and substituted, and copper was one of the four main ones that they would have to, that the cows were lacking. But when they proved that these livers were very well mineralized, these cows were well mineralized, all the different health outcomes, whether it be how many antibiotics the cow would have to have, it would be very few, if any. Their pregnant rates, their fertility rates, their weight of gain, how much weight they would gain on grass. I mean, every statistic you can measure was much improved simply by remineralizing appropriately. They wouldn't have to use as much steroid. They wouldn't have the liver fluke problem. They wouldn't have all these different infectious problems just from good mineralization. So the beef liver's where it's at. We better take a break. Yeah, Wade, we're there.
Yeah, we'll do that.
We'll come back and talk about Alzheimer's.
Okay, stick around. We'll be right back with more with You're the Cure right here on AM. Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Right here, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. And we'll get back to Morley talking more about copper bioavailability in beef liver and tabs. I take the tabs every day. And I say every day. Melody gives it to me at least every day. Now, I don't take it. Sometimes I realize a day goes by and, I didn't take my beef liver tabs.
Well, you got to beat the cats, it sounds like.
That's true. She put a lid on it. The cats get after it.
They'll steal that and fish oil.
Make a beeline before the feline, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And bee pollen, that's one that I often forget too. Morley mentioned a second ago, especially local grown bee pollen, which I don't know if the orchard out in Idaho does that. I know they make honey, but I don't know if they do bee pollen.
I have not seen that.
But bee pollen will have copper also.
Absolutely.
All right, Morley. Take it away.
Let's get into old timers, right?
Yeah,
so old timers.
Here's some interesting statistics. Every second of every day, our body needs to make 2.5 million red blood cells. Every second. That's a lot of red blood cells. And inside the red blood cells is a lot of hemoglobin, as you all know. Well, inside each hemoglobin is four heme proteins, each one carrying oxygen. So when Dr. Ben was talking about we can't live without iron, that's exactly what he's talking about. But that entire process of making heme and hemoglobin is regulated by copper. And it's very clearly spelled out in the literature, but not taught elsewhere. So that's an important backdrop. We have this voracious need to turn over red blood cells.
I might add more, if we're making 2.4 million a second, then I would assume we're also losing roughly that many, because red blood cells die all the time. So there's a bunch dying, then we're making a lot more, meaning iron's got to be moving around and being recycled.
Right, and that's the key. That's the second time you've referenced the word recycle. It's one of the most important functions in our body. And so we need to recycle that iron. We need to recycle a lot of parts in the body, and that whole function of recycling is copper dependent. Very, very important process. And it's especially important inside our brain. So let's take a quick dive into the brain. The brain is 2% of the body weight of the body, but it consumes 20% of the oxygen of the body. So an enormous differential, 10 times more oxygen being consumed by the brain than its body weight. And it's consuming 25% of the body's cholesterol, which is it's incredible. A quarter of the cholesterol in the body is needed in the brain. Here's where it gets really fascinating. 99% of that cholesterol must be recycled. It's not coming from our diet because it can't cross the blood-brain barrier. So the brain needs to rebuild this cholesterol, and what's that cholesterol called? DHA, docosahexaenoic acid. It's a very important form of cholesterol. And so we've got this enormous amount of cholesterol in the brain. And what is 70% of that cholesterol being used for? To make what's called the myelin sheath, which is the covering for our nerves so they don't touch each other and fritz out. And what's the cell that's doing all that myelin production? It's called the oligodendrocyte. Could they have come up with a more confusing word? But it's a very important myelin factory for the brain. And who's the master powerhouse and recycler in the brain? It's called the astrocyte. Now, just to give you a sense of how the universe is supporting this process, over a period of a week, I kept seeing people either wearing Houston Astro hats or Houston Astro sweatshirts. And I'm thinking, Astros, why do I need to know about the Astros? And then I stumbled on article after article after article about this incredibly important brain cell called the astrocyte. It is this powerhouse of activity in the brain. And so picture three parts of the brain standing next to each other. You have what's called the blood-brain barrier, which we've all heard of, but we don't know what it does. Well, it's keeping toxins out. And the more magnesium is in that blood-brain barrier, the healthier it is. Then right next to the blood-brain barrier are these astrocytes, and they have what are called end feet, and the end feet actually go in and wrap around the capillaries in our brain. Because they're communicating and getting nutrients from those capillaries, because that's where the nutrients, but that's the choo-choo train, is the capillaries. And they are taking the nutrients out of the blood, they are working with them, and then they are supplying nutrients to the next cell standing next to them. It's called the neuron. And so we know about the neurons. The neurons don't work right, then we don't feel right. Well, all of this dynamic that we're going to be talking about with Alzheimer's disease is all based on a breakdown of the astrocytes. Because it turns out there's two key aspects of it. One is there's an enzyme that we've talked about before. It's called ferrooxidase enzyme. And that enzyme is presented in different aspects of the body. And in the liver, it's called ceruloplasmin. In our gut, it's called hephaestin. And in the mother's womb, in the uterus, it's called zyklopen. I can't imagine that there are too many obstetricians out there that even know that or ever measure it. And it's one of the most important enzymes in the mother's body because it's regulating iron flow between mother and baby. Probably one of the most important functions in the body. And so this ferrooxidase enzyme is expressed in the brain, and it's called GPI-CP. It's about 12 syllables long. GPI is about 12 syllables long, and then hyphen ceruloplasmin. But that's the ferrooxidase function in the brain, and I've always seen it referred to as membrane bound. I've read hundreds of articles about GPI-CP is membrane bound, but it was the article that I sent you, Dr. Ben, that finally connected. What membrane is it attached to? It's attached to the astrocyte. And so suddenly when you learn that membrane-bound form of ferrooxidase is attached to the astrocytes, and the astrocytes are recycling all this ceruloplasmin, all this cholesterol, and then you find out that, well, you can't regulate cholesterol unless you have copper, suddenly the astrocyte becomes this copper-centered aspect of the brain. And so the astrocytes in the brain, the hepatocytes in the liver, the enterocytes in the gut, the podocytes in the kidney are these incredibly copper-rich cells that are regulating and recycling all over the body.
Okay.
And this is completely lost on conventional healthcare practitioners, regardless of what training they receive.
I want the listeners to understand what Morley was saying. This really important enzyme in the liver, in the gut, in the mother's womb, and now in the brain. This is the enzyme I was talking about, the chaperone that iron has to have. Iron's got to be moved around the right way and chaperoned the right way and kept in the right state. These enzymes do that. In the gut, in the womb, in the liver, in the brain, and it's located in the brain in this astrocyte, in the cell membrane of this astrocyte cell. And copper is essential for all these for this enzyme function that is in all different parts of the body. But what we're talking about right now is the brain with an astrocyte. So that's key to know that this is the chaperone that's going to move this iron around appropriately, and it has to have iron to work right. So go ahead, Warren. I mean, it has to have copper to work right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. So what's really important is to be able to regulate the iron that's in the brain. There's not a lot of iron in the brain, but there is enough that it's a source of concern. And if this GPI ceruloplasmin, this ferrooxidase function, isn't working right, it will allow for the increased production of oxidative stress, which we were talking about earlier. And then that oxidative stress becomes a source of rust for other enzymes. Well, people who are familiar with Alzheimer's, it's actually quite fascinating. It was Alois Alzheimer. He was a German physiologist who discovered this in 1902. He discovered this phenomenon. And very interesting history about him, but I'm not going to go into it right now. But there is a guy named Alzheimer who discovered this. And the key is that if there isn't adequate copper to regulate the iron in the brain, then it starts to rust out. And a key part of the rusting process is something called amyloid plaque. People have probably heard of that. Well, if I've gotten into studying this particular condition, I've now identified 10 different enzymes in the brain, all of which are copper dependent. And if there isn't enough copper, or if there's too much iron, all 10 of these enzymes begin to break down. And what are those enzymes doing principally? They're either creating energy or clearing exhaust. And Dr. Ben, if you go back to our original training, that was sort of the most basic understanding of the cells. It's got to be able to create energy or clear exhaust, and or clear exhaust. And in the brain, there's no greater need because the oxidative burn rate in the body is greatest in the brain. All of that oxygen that's flowing through there has the potential to create what are called accidents with oxygen, and those are called oxidants. And Dr. Ben made reference to free radicals. You know, go ahead, have as many as you want. They're free, right? Well, they're very toxic, and it's copper that prevents those oxidants. And what is copper doing? It's powering up the antioxidant enzymes that make sure that they don't have their negative effect on the brain tissue. So that's one side of Alzheimer's, is this failure to properly regulate the iron that can trigger the production of what are called oxidants. The other side that you referred to earlier is mitochondrial dysfunction. And another article that I found, and I haven't had a chance to send this to you yet, Dr. Ben, but I will, is one of the most important aspects of the mitochondria is to make those heme. You know, go back to that, every second we've got to make, you know, 10 million heme, or whatever the number is enormous. It's 2.5 million red blood cells, but it's billions of heme. It's hard to fathom, but it's a very big number. And so the mitochondrial role in all of this is especially important. And the presence of mitochondria is highest in the brain tissue, again, because of all that oxygen. And so the key step in the mitochondria is like a little racetrack, and there's 5 stops on that racetrack. And stop number 4 is called complex 4. And it's called, the clinical term for it is called cytochrome C oxidase, and it requires bioavailable copper to work. And one of its most important functions is to turn oxygen into water so that the precursor energy molecules with the initials ADP can go to complex 5 to become ATP and get attached to magnesium so the body can use them. But another critical function inside that mitochondria that's also copper-driven is the production of heme. And there are 8 steps in the... There are 8 proteins involved in making heme, and at least 3 of the 8 require copper. And the most important are the first and the last. And the first enzyme and the last enzyme are absolutely copper dependent. And what this particular research team discovered was that the lack of copper affected the last enzyme. It's called ferrochelatase. And ferrochelatase is like a little crane that's picking up an iron atom and dropping it into the center of the heme that was made in a prior step. And so the crane operator is copper. And if the crane operator is not there, if it's MIA, then you can't make hemite, and then the whole production of energy is affected in the mitochondria. That's the very epicenter of mitochondrial dysfunction, especially in an aging brain. And the reason why this is so important is you'll see in the literature that they'll make reference to the fact that the incidence of Alzheimer's is higher in the aging brain. Like we, you know, you read article after article, and somewhere in the article they'll make reference to that. Well, what is the aging brain? That's code for the buildup of iron. Because every day we're on this planet, we're adding iron to our frame. But no one ever told us that. And so that, you know, guys especially, Wade, Dr. Ben, and myself, we're like magnets for iron from cradle to grave. But individuals like Melody and her female colleagues, they have a biological advantage. They are, on a monthly basis, releasing blood and releasing iron, and that's why their incidence of heart disease is so notably lower, especially while they're menstruating. Again, this iron tide is very important to regulate, especially when you don't have enough copper. And that's why this whole focus on ancestral diet and having access to organ meats and having access to whole food vitamin C becomes so important. Yeah. Let me explain what this whole food vitamin C is all about. Well, a lot of people right now have what are called multiple chemical sensitivities, MCS. It's another epidemic in society. And what's the enzyme that's not working in the liver when you have multiple chemical sensitivities? It's called polyphenol oxidase. The minute you see the word oxidase, you figure, oh, it's working with oxygen. Oh, it must involve copper. Because copper has a completely different relationship with oxygen than iron does. Copper activates oxygen and turns it into water in a very graceful way. Iron agitates oxygen and turns it into rust. Very different properties. So that this polyphenol oxidase plays a critical role in our liver so that we can slice and dice, like a Benihana chef, these chemicals that we're exposed to and create chemicals that we can then excrete in our urine and in our feces. Well, what's another name for polyphenol oxidase? It's also called tyrosinase. Oh, well, that's the enzyme that's at the center of the whole food vitamin C molecule. And then, Dr. Ben, I found a textbook on neonatology from the 1950s, and
just happened upon my, it.
Just happened upon it, right? Yeah. But and bruised myself when I fell out of my chair when they referred to this exact same enzyme as thyroxinase, thyroxinase. So that polyphenol oxidase, tyrosinase, and thyroxinase are all the same thing. And they're all copper-dependent enzyme functions.
And they break down the chemicals that we're exposed to daily. And if you can't break those down, then you'll be real sensitive and have symptoms. Call it multiple.
And the reason why that name thyroxinase is so important is it takes us back to the thyroid. And as Dr. Ben can tell us, the key enzyme in the thyroid is called thyroid peroxidase, TPO. Everybody knows about their TPO. And that enzyme doesn't work right unless there's vitamin C, wink, wink. Well, back in the 50s, it was called thyroxinase. And then over time, it got changed and then lost and turned into ascorbic acid, which is basically poison for the body because what does ascorbic acid do? It chelates copper and prevents its ability to be absorbed, and it destroys the ferrooxidase function in the body. And so the old-timer's brain needs more bioavailable copper, and it needs less reactive iron. And the term that I've seen in the literature for several years, didn't really understand it, they would refer to iron as part of the labile iron pool. Well, I very cavalierly thought, well, labile means free. And so I just kept reading these articles thinking about the free iron pool, knowing that that was not good, but I didn't understand what labile meant. So a couple weeks ago, I actually got out a dictionary and looked up the word labile, And what it really means is reactive. And where is this reactive iron pool found inside our cells? They refer to it as inside the cell, when in fact it's inside the mitochondria. And this very reactive pool of iron is building in our mitochondria, disrupting the energy production, disrupting the heme production, thereby causing a breakdown in the proper metabolism of the brain cells. Then the astrocyte starts to fritz out, which then affects the neurons. And when the neurons can't be fed properly, they start to die. And then what goes when the neurons start to die? Memory. The memory loss builds when neurons are dying, especially in the hippocampus, which is a very important part of the brain where memory is stored. And so this is just, it's absolutely fascinating to piece it apart and come to realize that it's only a few enzymes, it's less than a dozen, but they're all copper dependent. But this idea that it's caused by aluminum, well, what's aluminum doing? Aluminum's lining up the transferrin. It's supposed to be transporting the iron, so then there's more Laval iron in the brain because there's less transferrin to transport it. You know, all of these toxins that people are talking about, and then, of course, there's the whole school of thought about, well, you need more zinc in an Alzheimer's brain. That would be the absolute worst thing you could do, because when you start to take zinc supplements, it's going to trigger a protein called metallothionine, which binds up copper 1,000 times stronger than it binds up zinc. So the zinc therapy for Alzheimer's patients is only accelerating the breakdown of their brain tissue, because it's taking more and more copper away from the brain tissue that needs that copper. Okay. So there's a lot of faulty thinking out there about how to deal with this, but the focus that we've had since day one of our conversations is absolutely the epicenter of sanity about how to bring the body back into balance.
All right, summary time.
Yeah.
And you kind of did at the beginning. It's all about making energy. The cells got to make energy so it can function. Your brain cells have to make energy. They happen to be a very, very, very energetic part of the body. Your brain obviously is firing off a gazillion neurons at one time. So you've got to have a massive amount of energy production in the brain. But when there's energy production, there's also exhaust production. So exhaust, think free radicals, but then think antioxidant enzymes, put out the free radicals. So copper's needed. Morley mentioned complex 4. Copper's needed to make that energy. So your brain better be full of bioavailable copper if you want to make energy for that brain to work right and have a good memory. But then all the exhaust that you make, that exhaust is going to damage the brain and lead to, basically, in a nutshell, it's that amyloid beta plaque. If these different enzymes that deal with exhaust aren't functioning right, you follow that trail rabbit hole long enough and you end up with amyloid beta plaque. I had a friend of mine send me an article just this weekend. He had read West Virginia University, I believe, is where this was out of. They were touting this very hopeful therapy for Alzheimer's. They used it on one patient in West Virginia, and it was simply ultrasound. Ultrasound of the brain and a particular technique was able to dissolve these plaques. These amyloid beta plaques disappeared or dissolved with this ultrasound technique. And I hated to be Debbie Downer, but my response to him was, well, that's great. You know, we'll see as time progresses, does that translate to a better memory for this guy? And how quick do these plaques redevelop? I mean, it eerily reminded me of blockages in the coronary artery. We go in there, put a stent or a bypass to deal with this blockage, but it turns out after 10 or 20 years of doing this and studying this, that bypasses and stents do not reduce risk of heart attacks, future heart attacks, or death from future heart attacks. So, you know, it looks great on the surface, but what's the real end result? Nothing. It didn't really help. Why did it not help? Because it didn't address the root cause. So trying to focus on these amyloid beta plaques and doing something to dissolve them or give a medication to try to do something about them, my prediction is that that ultrasound's not going to pan out. It's not going to work long term to relieve this problem. You got to go upstream. Why did that plaque get deposited in the brain to begin with? Right. And we just laid it out here. It's too much exhaust without the right enzymes to deal with the exhaust. It's lack of energy production because you don't have the copper there to do that. And we've got to remember, I don't think we mentioned yet in the show this time, that we've been fed excess iron since the 1940s. They've added it to the diet. I mean, I just got I'll throw these people under the bus, I guess, but school lunches. I'll just say, I read about a school lunch recently that it was going to be a pasta, a baked pasta something with a brownie and milk. And my first thought was, my first thought didn't go to the carbs and that'll spike the sugar and that'll cause these kids to you know, have behavioral issues. It went to, man, how much iron are we giving them in that bowl of pasta and a brownie? That we're excessively loading them up with iron even more. Iron fortification of our foods since the 40s has put a tremendous strain on the body. At the same time, we've depleted the copper from our diet. The soil doesn't have it. The vegetables don't have it. They're not vine ripened. We're not eating the organ meats. So we've just zapped our copper to nothing, and we've added excess iron, and we just laid out a really good case for what's that going to do. Well, it's going to create tons of free radicals with no capability to put out those fires of oxidative stress and inflammation, because the enzymes that do that require copper. So it kind of all boils down, like we talked about at the top of the show, you can chase down all these different environmental toxins and lifestyle factors, and I'm not saying you shouldn't, but don't do it at the expense of not focusing on the core key issue, which is normal mineral status. You've got to have the right mineral balance. You've got to have your copper up. To deal with the excess iron, you got to get rid of the iron. So quit eating the iron. Quit eating the standard American diet that has iron. Go donate blood routinely to get rid of the excess iron that you've accumulated in your tissues all these years. That's the foundation. And the root cause protocol's whole point, the protocol more or less put together, is to get this iron moving out in the right way, bound the right way, chaperoned the right way, get the copper up, and getting that ancestral diet going to support this whole thing. So, great talk, Morley. I mean, that was a lot of enzymes, a lot of words that end in ace. I'm going to have to go back and review. That thyroid in particular, I think we're going to have to just set up our next show, because I know you've already sent me some emails with new articles on the thyroid, and thyroid's a ubiquitous. It seems like 90% of the patients that walk in our door at Veritas, and probably walk into every doctor's door, have symptoms of low thyroid function. Their blood tests may say they're normal, and oftentimes does, but clinically, symptomatically, these people are a textbook case of hypothyroidism, low thyroid function. And you've kind of touched on that a little bit here, but we're probably going to have to dive into that.
I think it'll be fascinating. Two quick comments. One of the Magpies on the Magnesium Advocacy Facebook group brought to our attention that organic foods are now enriching iron. So even if it says organic, that's not safe. That's a big blow to the whole organic food movement, is that now they're enriching iron in those foods. Second thing, to build up on your comment about the amyloid plaque, and you're absolutely right. It's the return of the cholesterol problem that we had in the heart. It's just playing out in the brain. But when the astrocyte is working properly, it prevents or it corrects amyloid beta plaque. And that's a very important idea for people to understand, is that these developments that take place, like the plaque in the artery or the plaque in the brain, those are not diseases. It's an adaptive response of a body that doesn't have bioavailable copper, trying to do the best that it knows how.
Yeah.
And it's a very important reaction in the body, but it's a correctable reaction once you start to change your diet and focus on the dynamics that we're exploring here today.
Yeah. The body is exceedingly resilient, has an amazing intelligence to it that can deal with a whole lot of stuff, a whole lot of insults, a whole lot of toxic exposure. But you've got to nourish it the right way. You've got to balance the minerals the right way. So encourage y'all to, all the listeners out there, to go back if you haven't, listen to all the Morley interviews, and you'll learn more about why it's so important to balance these minerals. So, Morley, thank you for joining us. Always good to get real techie and sciencey with you.
Well, no, it's great. And what I love most, Dr. Ben, is your ability to take the techie and sciencey and turn it into concepts and terms that everyone understands. That's your gift. So I appreciate that.
Well, that's our goal. You're the cure. Our body will cure itself, but we've got to educate the masses to turn this tide of horrible chronic disease epidemic around. So y'all get your friends and family to listen, and let's get this country turned in the right direction health-wise. So y'all come back next week. We'll have more.
Thanks, Morley. Appreciate that.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Morley.
You've been listening to Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the cure right here on AM 580. Check out our website, veritasmedical.com. That's veritasmedical.com for our archived programs. We'll see you back here next Monday on You're the Cure. Have a great rest of the week.